you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What happened on Monday night against the Patriots and why it will never happen again. Plus, McDermott and Daboll. What's wrong and how it can get fixed. Plus, where the Bills stand in the AFC and what needs to happen to save the season. That's all coming up on this week's edition of the Buffalo Plus Podcast.
Welcome back to the Buffalo Plus Podcast presented by Connors and Ferris, Mike Catalana, Dan Fates. I am Jenna Cottrell. We're getting you ready for week 14, but of course, we're also going to talk about what happened between the Bills and the Patriots. Mike, there is a lot to discuss with this. Where do you want to start with this?
Let's start with the way the game ended up being played. And Dan, you were down on the field, so you know the weather portion of it. But there's no question that the weather impacted the game.
Correct.
It didn't totally cripple it, but it impacted.
Correct.
It was these strange circumstances that we had, right? And it led to a game that I don't think we will ever see again. I mean, the Patriots running it on nearly every play.
Yeah.
And what became the narrative of the game was almost as if the Bills couldn't stop the run. But then when you really take a look at it, Patriots weren't that effective running the ball, certainly not to score points. They got the one touchdown and the two, and then they had two field goals. Mm-hmm. The whole game came down to the Bills' offense failing and not being able to capitalize, as Sean McDermott liked to point out, on the great field position. So I think it was more a failure of the Bills' offense, credit to the Patriots' defense, and then the big-time narrative of look at Belichick, who obviously is the best coach of all time, at least in my opinion and a lot of other people's opinion. But his idea to run the ball on every play, to me, was a factor in the game, but it wasn't the reason that the Patriots won the game.
Well, and we talked about this after we had our post-game blog. We always have our initial reactions. We put them up on YouTube on the night games. They go up in the morning here on the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel. Like, comment, and subscribe. We're nearing now 12,000.
Thanks, Dan.
Crazy to think that. We even had a shout-out. Mike and I were doing our live hits before the game, and somebody we interviewed somebody. So shout-out if you're watching. And he's like, oh, I watch your guys' stuff on YouTube all the time. So we appreciate that. We enjoy it. We find viewers everywhere. But to go off that, Mike, you're talking about the weather. Like, I know a lot of people, there were a lot of fans there that, oh, the weather. And then there were some people and even some analysts, like, you know, again, I'm not trying to give like clickbait to all the other like shows, but like FS1 had it and said it was a snow game, was like the lower third graphic. Like, yeah. It snowed for like 4 minutes of the game. Pre-game was awful. Like, the shots that you saw before the game of the swirling snow, I turned into a snowman in a two minute live hit. Like, that weather was really bad.
You asked to do that live hit.
Yeah, you did.
I asked.
Can I just pause you right there? I just loved it. You had one snowflake fly directly onto your face, and it was like the biggest snowflake I've ever seen.
And the kicker too, out there. And like I said, the wind a lot of times swirls at Orchard Park or at Highmark Stadium or the Ralph or whatever you guys want to call it. Like, but the wind was blowing directly into your face to have the live shot. Like, have the stadium as the background. If we would have turned around, you would have been like, oh, whatever. Like, the snow would be hitting. It was just constant. Anyway, the conditions were way worse pregame. Tailgating was awful. During the game, that game wouldn't even be, honestly, in the top 10 worst games that I have filmed in, element-wise. Games that have impacted weather. It was worse during the Colts game, Mike. It was cold, rainy, constant. Jenna, like, there have been worse games. I mean, obviously, it was not this snow game. It wasn't sub-zero degree temperatures with this wind chill. Yes, yeah, the wind was blowing.
But
very
it did,
hard the one way. Yes, it did impact the game.
Certainly the kicking part and the throwing part. And it did impact the Bills more than it did.
100%. But it's funny. Getting up to people on Twitter, like, were you not at the game? Dude, I was on the sidelines. Like, yeah, I was there. The kicking game was affected. Going away from the tunnel, it was blowing pretty much right into you. And it gusted at times that kind of like jolted you. You kind of had to catch yourself for a second, but it wasn't constant. And like I said, when we get into it, the fact that like the Patriots running the ball, if the Bills go down there and drive at the end of the game and win it, like I thought they kind of felt like they were.
Yeah.
We're sitting here and the analysis is Belichick was uberly conservative, doesn't trust his quarterback, and they lost. I can't believe you'll lose a game when you only throw three passes. This narrative is, and like I said, Mike, like you were talking about, that the Bills can't stop the run. They held their own. Now it sucks when there's two big plays that killed you. It was a big run and stuff like that, but there's a lot that is getting made out of this game that I think isn't necessarily 100% accurate of this defense or this weather.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is just the more outstanding things, in my opinion, are the red zone issues that we've seen mm-hmm. this Bills team have and the consistency of inconsistency of back and forth every other week. We've seen this team win and then lose and then win and then lose. And we're now entering week 14. And what was the Bills' last back-to-back win? What was it, week 4 and 5?
Five at Kansas City.
Yeah. Yep. So this has been a team that's kind of, it's so interesting hearing the players talk. And, they've been asked, like, what is your identity? It's December. Like, this team's identity is that they can be that streaky and that inconsistent. And, Mike, those red zone issues, I agree with Dan. Like, I was waiting for this Bills team to come back and win. And we saw it so many times last year. Josh Allen in the fourth quarter able to overcome. And this year, this team has not been able to really win a close game. They haven't been able to put the points up to do it. And those red zone issues, like, it's so concerning where they're at. And the frustrations that they're having, because this is not just one game. This is not just two games.
It reminded Dan and I, certainly offensively, they didn't have the turnovers, a bit of Jacksonville. It's kind of funny to compare Jacksonville
and
New England. When they get, and you guys will hear, everybody knows the phrase, they'll say behind the sticks. Like when you're more than 10 yards to go, when you keep going in the wrong direction, it's tough, especially mm-hmm. in the red zone, because the space is limited. So you're sitting there at third and goal from the 16, that's brutal. And they put themselves, and it's dumb stuff. Dumb. Josh cannot take a sack in those circumstances. You got to get the ball out. You can't have false starts, Dawson Knox. It's just a killer. And when it's already a struggle, and then you add in those things. And when I say that, look, a guy gets beat, the quarterback gets sacked. I get it. That can happen. But that clock's got to be in the quarterback's head to say, mm-hmm. I got to get it out. We can't afford this. It's not like it's fourth down and you got to make the play, and the false starts and the holding calls sometimes.
Yeah.
That comes a lot of times from missing your assignment. And now you got to grab a hold of somebody. So they've done that a lot. And what did Dable say right away? McDermott said it. We went backwards. Like, everybody's trying to find this one consistent thing and it's consistently inconsistent, however you want to phrase it. Like you said, where it's like, yep, they did it again. Yep. They went backwards. Yes. They had a false start. And then they drop passes when they have chances, when somebody can make a play.
Yeah.
And I know the guy, people are going to already to comment. The guy knocked the ball out of Knox's hands. Yes, he could have caught it. They could have gotten a touchdown on that one. We know, obviously, Diggs dropped another one.
Yeah.
But so it's a lot of different things, but the red zone is killing them, Dan.
Yeah, and you're going backwards. And they keep bringing up, again, we can talk about post-game press conferences, but they bring up Mitch Morse, who I really think gives some thoughtful answers. And he was asked about the red zone issues, and he had the best quote, I thought, that was useful at the end of the game, where he said that there's never an ideal time or opportune time to shoot yourself in the foot, but we choose to do it at the absolute worst times. And it's so true. They get to the 6-yard line, you're like, here it comes, and it doesn't. And they shoot themselves in the foot. It's a holding call. And like I said, that has been the lather, rinse, repeat. That is the one thing that has been actually consistent this year, is that it is one problem compounded with another problem, which is then compounded by a missed field goal or a punt or a turnover on downs. That is what has happened. And again, we can look at it, and Dan Orlovsky did a great breakdown of, and Mike, you even asked Brian Daboll about the touchdown that they did have to Gabriel Davis. Phenomenal design concept throughout. And Mike, you're like, why can't you just do it again?
Like, yeah, and I asked him in that way because I wanted him to explain it's not always easy to get those circumstances. Mm-hmm. The Patriots know what you did, but they do try to, like he said, we had something similar later. You try to get in that same spot. New England knows it too, right? So within that spot. But what I liked about that, you're right, what I liked about that play was, and Orlovsky was explaining it, that it was the few things go together. Josh brings that, things that fans don't even notice. And if I get one more person tell me they never play action, it's exactly what they did on that touchdown.
Yep.
Play actions. Josh is decisive. There goes Diggs or Gabe Davis reading the room. That's help for the red zone coming.
I was literally
Tyrants. It's red zone help coming in for the Bills. And he throws it and it's a touchdown. And it, I won't say it looks easy, but it looks so efficient. And that, unfortunately, Jenna, that's been the outlier. Mm-hmm. That hasn't been what they've done this year.
No, I know. And we talk so much about how mature this team is, and they have so many veterans and all of these things. Dan, is this team really mature? Because I feel like we've talked about it, but at the same point, these are mistakes that can be cleaned up and corrected. And every week we hear about, you know, we just need to execute better. At what point is it, maybe this team isn't as mature as we thought?
That's a really good question and a really good point. I think they're mature enough to understand it. It's just a matter of, are they good enough right now to fix it? And right now they're not playing good enough. Like, Mike, we talked about it, that this game felt like Jacksonville, where I felt like even though with how bad they had played and how they had it seemed like so many things had gone against them. I still thought with 4 minutes to go, here comes Josh, we're going to do it. And then the conversation after the game would be like, whew, ugly win in December, but hey, you got the win and that's all that matters. And you're in first place and all these things in Jacksonville. Well, you didn't play good, but when it counted the most, they did it. The problem is that you can do that game. And the Bills have addressed it too. They said, well, you know, the 200 and some odd rushing yards they gave up. Well, if you take out the one big long run, it's only 3.5 rushing yards. Yeah, but you can't.
And if you say, Greg Williams line.
Yeah. And like, so this thing is that like, you can do this with a lot of teams. Guess what, Mike? The Lions could have won a couple of games if Justin Tucker doesn't hit a 66-yarder. But you can't take away that play. Yeah. And guess what? Good teams like the Bills did last year found ways to make the plays. This team hasn't found ways to make plays when it counts at the end of the game.
I just have one comment. I just find it very interesting that it is Jenna questioning the maturity of men in their 20s and 30s.
I've been fooled by them so many times. Just overall. Yeah. You know what? They're all immature. I should have known. Mike, all right, we'll go to mature men then. Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Sean McDermott. This situation, Sean McDermott saying after the game, don't give Bill Belichick more credit than he needs. But again, I think what we saw.
Yeah.
Some of those moments, like the challenge call by McDermott, some of those things where you're like, what is going on?
Well, that question was, again, the psychological impact of, you know, look, it's a talented reporter, used to be in Buffalo, Matthew Fairburn, and he's asking that question as a guy who knows the Bills and knows the Patriots. But when you ask a head coach, I don't care who you are, unless you're a first game rookie, Sean McDermott respects Bill Belichick. Do I think he likes him?
100%.
Right. Yeah. Do I think he likes him? No. Yeah. Do I think he's like, oh, Bill, he ain't Andy Reid to him. He's the guy that denied Andy Reid. Right. He's the guy that's done. Like, that's the guy you're going after. And then the question sort of is like, what is the psychological impact? Like, McDermott was having none of that. I like an angry McDermott.
I do too.
Okay?
Too,
I do think he made mistakes during the game. I think he got a little frustrated. And I think there's things when you look back on, you're like, this was a problem. That was a problem. And then he threw the line in of Belichick ridiculously had with his wide receiver field and punts. And McDermott got in a line. You did see that in the post game where he's like, yeah, I didn't want to have what happened to them because that burned the Patriots. Like, even Bill Belichick makes mistakes. But the thing was like, the psychological impact. Again, it's not necessarily the question. Sometimes it's the way it's phrased. Mm-hmm. And McDermott got angry and was snippy. Now, I also listened to the Boston fanboy reporters going off on that. And please, it's supposed to be some tough market reporters. It's a bunch of fanboys fawning all over everything. But the idea was, Well, it really is. The idea was
just
like
dunk on a mic.
Well, I mean, come on. You know, they would look at us as little small town Rochester and Buffalo. And, you know, they're all like, oh, McDermott is getting whatever.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Belichick. So I do agree that McDermott made some mistakes. I do agree it's tough to coach against Belichick. But I like when Sean gets cranky. I like when he's mad. I want to see that come out in the team this week.
Two things off that point. One, Sean was more emotional, more intense on the sidelines than I had seen in quite some time. And I liked that. The question was kind of like, the follow-up question from the Matthew Fairburn, who used to write for The Athletic in Buffalo, was like, do you think that that rubs off your team the wrong way? Does that frustration kind of bleed into your team? And he's like, that's who I am. And again, I go back to what it was in Jacksonville when the Jaguars are going, their sideline was dead. Like they didn't. And I think Sean was doing everything he could to keep his team in it. Yeah, he was pissed off at a couple of calls. He was livid at some refs and was pointing at them and all those things. I liked all that. It's not over the top. It's not comical. Like you see Belichick throws the phone. It's like, oh, he gets it. It's like, oh, so when Sean yells at a ref, it's childish? No, it's not. Sean McDermott has earned the respect that he can be himself on the sidelines. And I think he's also, as we've been saying, trying to send a message to his team. Yeah. Like Sean's angry. You guys get angry. I'm angry. Where are you guys?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I feel like we've seen him be so disciplined all the time that it's like, you know what? No, he is frustrated and it's going to show and react to that. Sometimes when someone, I feel like when they're very stoic or whatever, you're like, oh, it's okay. But seeing him get that angry and that frustrated, like that sent the message home.
You're right, Jenna. It's so funny you say that because I always think when a guy is stoic and they're winning, he looks, you know,
so
calm, cool. When they're losing, he looks clueless. When a coach is fired up and they're winning, he's emotional. When they're not, he's lost it and his team is going to follow it. Look, I go back to from when we were in Jacksonville, Sean McDermott, first year, lost that playoff game and watching that guy stand outside the locker room and greet every one of his players coming in the door. You remember that. Here he is standing there. And I thought, wow, in this big moment when they lost his first playoff game, that's who he is. Mm-hmm. And I think he's still that guy. Does he get cranky a little bit? Yeah. Does he not want to lose to Belichick? Yeah. But the other part about this is he's 2-2 in his last four games against Belichick. Okay. I don't care if Belichick didn't have the team he wanted last year. He beat him twice and he blew him out in the second game. Yeah. And this time Belichick got him and he got him in a close game in the one in 2019 at the end of the year. So it's a rivalry now. It's on between the two of them and they'll get another chance.
And Mike, going off that game back at the end where he blew him out, that was Monday Night Football. That was the Bills just putting dirt over the Patriots' grave of that season. I remember asking McDermott after the game in the Zoom call, Belichick and McDermott had a long post-game handshake. Like it was like, in Belichick terms, it was an eternity because we've seen his post-game handshakes be milliseconds.
You got to slow him down.
You have to slow them down.
Seriously.
He pulled McDermott in close and they had.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
I remember tweeting it out being like, this is something. Like, Belichick doesn't do this.
And he should have played the Titanic music over the top of it when they were hugging.
Yes. And the fact is that I asked McDermott about it and he was like, and I knew he wasn't going to tell me what Bill said, but I said, like, what did that mean? That, like, it wasn't just the, oh, hey, I beat you, you know. Hey, once again, I beat you. Or, hey, you beat me with Cam Newton or like whatever. You know what I'm saying? It was a meaningful conversation. And he's like, yeah, that's the greatest. He's the greatest to ever do it. He said that. Like, so to sit here and say like the fanboy media in Boston to go, oh, that's disrespectful. Nobody respects. Like, Sean McDermott's all about respect. He's not going to sit there. He's not going to sit there and be like, guess what? If we give up an 8-yard gain, instead of a 64-yard gain, guess what? I probably beat this dude. So don't sit here and tell me that he outcoached me so masterfully. When he even went on to say it, Mike, it wasn't a shocker that they ran the ball all the time. He's like, we knew it was coming. What do you want me to do?
Yeah. I will say, though, I think that's a point of frustration for so many Bills fans, Mike, is the fact that you knew the Patriots were going to run the ball, albeit not as much as only three pass attempts from Mac Jones. But at the same point, the Bills struggling to contain the run. And again, if you take out that long run, what's the, you know, yards per carry? It doesn't matter because they gave up that really long touchdown. But at the same point, I think Bills fans are so frustrated because you can run on this Bills team. And we've seen this now, the Colts game. We've seen this stretch back years.
Yeah, it has not been a strength. They don't have a guy that just eats things up in the middle, takes on two blockers. Like, I think they thought Starr was going to be that guy, and coming back from COVID. And
not coming back from COVID,
Yeah. So it's not been the case. I the thing was, what's frustrating and what got into the whole question of whether they were embarrassed with Hyde and Poyer and all was the fact that they were basically running the same play. But when you watch those plays and you watch them on the tape and you see it's just pull the guard from the left side, bring him to the right, hat on hat. And that's big boy football they're trying to do. The point was, it was impactful to a point. The Bills could have gotten them out of that with a touchdown. Diggs catches the ball. You know, they make the field goal. Like, a bunch of things could have happened to get him out of it. The Bills never got him out of it. That's why I put the blame on the Bills offense more than I do the Bills defense.
Yeah. And that's a great segue, because we look at this all the time, and this is the segue to the offense, but I just want to make one last point about the Bills defense is the fact of the Bills offense can be so predictable. It's so predictable. You don't want defenses to be able to know what you're going to do. The Bills knew what the Patriots were going to do. It didn't matter. And now, granted, what, Mike? They only had 11 first downs. So, again, it wasn't like they marched down the field all the time on the Bills. But this thought that the Bills' offense needs to be unpredictable, or that defenses now know what we're going to do, is a whole bunch of BS, in my opinion. Because this Bills' offense, you should be able to, at some point, tell another team what you're going to do, because they know it. Like, you act like these coaches don't study film for 50 hours a week, and that they're going to be shocked when a new play comes in. Like, well, I've never seen that. They've seen it all. These coaches get paid. They have assistants that just watch film for days, and to sit here and be like, we need to be more unpredictable. You guys, the Bills offense was very predictable in 2020. Stephon Diggs was getting the ball. Teams knew it, couldn't stop it. Guess what they still tried to do? He saw the most single coverage in the league. You don't think that teams were like, hey, this Stephon Diggs guy,
he's
pretty good. No, they went in there with a plan, and the Bills just were better. The Bills are not that good this year on offense for whatever reason. And it's struggling. And this thought of being unpredictable, or this balanced offense, to me is just a load of BS. Do what you do. It's throw the ball, because the best plays that the Bills had against the Patriots in those conditions were Josh Allen throwing the ball. Those were the most productive plays.
So, Mike, I want to ask then, do you think it's a discrepancy between McDermott and Daboll? Do you think it's just a differing philosophy? Do you think that McDermott wants a team that can maybe run the ball more, and maybe Daboll feels like he has to be tied to that?
So here's the way I look at it. Last year, it all worked. Dan's right. It worked. Daboll's running the offense. It worked. You're throwing the ball. You're scoring 30-plus points a game, 500 points. You go to the AFC Championship. It worked. It's not working this year. When it's not working, you look for something different. I think McDermott is right on one big point. When you do run the ball and can run the ball, you show a level of toughness that is needed in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And the Bills are not that team. But if I'm Brian Daboll, I'm sitting there going, okay, Brandon, Sean, you brought back the whole offensive line. You drafted a rookie. Great. You brought back everybody, and we came back with this team. In fact, one of our linemen came back 30 pounds less, and this is what you gave me. And now you're asking me, now we want to be tougher. You try it. He talked about trying it in training camp. That's when you start building these things. Wasn't happening. It doesn't happen. I don't see this group doing it. And so if they were scoring 30 points a game and flinging it all over the place and it was working, nobody'd be talking about the running game. Correct. But they're not doing that. And so I think McDermott is frustrated that this team is not scoring points and doesn't show that level of toughness. So he's looking for it from his offense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if Daboll and the team have that in them. So they keep trying things and it ain't working. And you keep beating your head against the wall to make it work. And yes, I do believe there's conflict between the two in how to get this done.
Dan, your smile If people are just listening to the podcast, Dan is just smiling and nodding his head.
As I've said in our post-game blog, with full disclosure, I still respect and trust Brian Daboll than some members of my family. So, like, I will put that out there. But the fact is that guess who wasn't a tough football team? The 2020 Bills. Didn't matter. Like they weren't a tough football team. Their defense was worse. And you're supposed to tell me that they were a more physical team last year. But like Mike's point said, when everything works, you just don't care. Like guess who's not a physical team? The Kansas City Chiefs. They're not a physical team. That's what the Bills were built to do, is to compete with speed. And Dawson Knox wasn't drafted to run block. And Stephon Diggs and Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley, while Cole Beasley may be as tough mentally as anybody is with playing through injuries and stuff like that, they're not a tough football team. They're not road graders. And guess why the Patriots can do what they do and why they can run the ball 46 times? Because they were built to run people over and push people around. That's what they were built to do. Trent Brown is comically large. He was a head taller than every single person in the Patriots huddle. And I went, yeah, they got him to run block. He's their offensive tackle. He's a human mountain, and he's moving people around. Like, they don't have that. And I want to quote like a tweet, because I was tweeting yesterday. We're recording this on Wednesday. What day is
that? Yes,
that's Wednesday.
Yes.
So I had said that, and it's an expression I've used before, that like, if you're a championship boxer and you have a big right hook, everybody that you fight knows you have a big right hook. That doesn't mean that you throw left-handed jabs to be a well-balanced boxer. Go in there and throw what you got, and you say, can you handle it? And Chris M, I want to give him a shout-out because I thought this was a great analogy. Chris M tweeted back at me and says, you don't buy a Ferrari and determine to take it off-roading. Like, the Bills are trying to become something that they're not. And Mike, you have said time and time before, and you've asked them, and the Bills have been asked, what is your guys' identity? They're a team that is built to spread teams out. That's what they were constructed to do. And now they're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole by going, we want to be a tough football team now. And they're not.
I would agree with you. I don't think they're built to be tough like you talked about. I think they're built more for finesse. But at the same point, I think we've seen, Sean McDermott came into this season, Brian Daboll, you know, Brandon Bean, about their fastball being their receivers, and they want to keep their receivers. I feel like we've seen, you know, Diggs has been good, but Cole Beasley has basically been out of it. I feel like Emmanuel Sanders has kind of faded in these last couple of weeks. Gabriel Davis, you've seen him catch the ball more, but like, you know, talking about Dawson Knox, including in that, like, he had some bad drops in that game. So I get totally what you're saying, Dan, but at the same point, I just don't feel like the level of play from some of those receivers has been at a level that we saw last year as well.
You're right, but defenses are playing them differently, and you do need to adjust. And the Ferrari comparison is an interesting one, but if you take that down a notch where it doesn't have to be the Ferrari, you might still need
Subaru
to put
Subaru and Tesla.
No, they
Tesla?
Don't make, they
haven't Mike, made make this a, Mike, give me a Tesla reference. Come
All
on.
Right, you want a Tesla reference? So everybody knows I have a Tesla, right? Because I'm green. I'm green. I want everybody to know that I'm green. I put snow tires on it. I love the car, but I put snow tires on it. Do I love driving it with snow tires? No, but at times I need those snow tires, because that's what you need. That's the analogy to what you have with the Bills. There are times you need to run it. You need to be able to run it. It needs to get through the snow. And that's what I'm saying with the Bills. The issue is with this team, they aren't what they were a year ago, and they don't have that other gear. And the other thing they cannot do, because, again, they're not built to do it. Man, there's teams that can crush you with a screen game. This team has thrown – they had the screen against – who was that? Against New Orleans.
Yeah. Yes. Did you tweet about it?
I tweeted in capital letters, the Bills executed a screen because they don't have the linemen. I like all those guys. They don't have the linemen that can get out in front of a screen. They don't have the timing. They're just off on all that. Orlovsky talked about it when we talked about the Bills screen game. They don't have those other gears that you need in different circumstances. But to your point, what gives them a shot, the puncher shot, the big left hook, is that they can throw the ball. So put it back in Josh's hands and chuck it around the park.
Well, two things, Mike. It's so funny because you talk about putting snow tires on a Tesla. That's what the Bills want to do. Unfortunately, They were put on by me, who doesn't know how to put on snow tires correctly. So the car sucks. So now it's not. So now it's just a Tesla
on baloney skins.
with crappy lug nuts not tested in right. That's what you got. And I love that we have now come, it seems like almost full circle. Because somebody tried to call me out on Twitter being like, oh, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, covers the team. He probably has tweets somewhere saying they should have run the ball more. You will never find a tweet of me ever saying to run the ball. I have been very open, very honest, to throw the ball on every single down ever. Okay. Yeah. But the fact is that it was, you know, this is great. Let Josh throw. And then somewhere we've gotten to the point where it's like, well, we got to run the ball more. Now people have officially realized that they are so bad at running the ball. It's like, screw it. Let's throw it with Josh. we have come full circle to where everybody's back on my side, where it's like, screw it. This is what we got. Let's just go all in with it. I love it. This team is, as I've said, is going to go as far as Josh Allen takes them. And I thought in the conditions he played fine. Diggs catches a ball. Things like that, like he was still Josh Allen, and I still think that's what you're going to get with him. And again, it sucks that, you know, Tyler Bass misses a tough field goal going into the wind. That's tough. Again, we can look at all these things and say coulda, woulda, shoulda, and what if. But you, at the end of the day, you lost the game, and it may seem like the sky's falling in and that Brian Daboll can't call plays anymore, that this can't happen. And that's just not the case. Like, I still have faith in – I still think Brian Daboll is one of the top of the line – offensive coordinators in the league, and it's not him that is full starts, and he's not the one holding, and he's not the one shooting himself in the foot on these drives for the most part.
I mean, yeah, and I think you look at the progression of Josh Allen, and you can say that Brian Daboll has been like, most of that is on Josh, but at the same point, like, Brian Daboll is a huge piece of that.
Real quick, I just, as we wrap up the Daboll McDermott part, one, I think they'll get it sorted out. Maybe they already have for the rest of this regular season. But I'll tell Bills fans who want to push that guy in 2 minutes, I think he's still going to get a head coaching job. I think it's still out there for him. And if not, you put Brian Daboll on the market, he's snapped up in 5 minutes to be a coordinator somewhere else. So you'll be complaining about the next offensive coordinator too when plays don't work. All right. Brian Daboll,
it's the easy scapegoat.
Notch. It is. Yeah. It's about play calls. Is anybody complaining about the play calls of Leslie Frazier for the defense when they didn't stop the run like you wanted in the last game? Is it play calls, or is it the players themselves, or is it the execution of those plays? So
okay, wait. Go ahead, Dan.
Is Sean McDermott calling plays on defense?
I think he has a pretty big impact on the defense. Hey, look,
I've seen him with the play sheet,
but that's
quite a bit of times
at all.
The microphone.
He definitely is. That's who he is. And he's worked with that. That wouldn't surprise me or bother me one bit if Sean
But he the did that done it. In the middle of last year when the defense was giving up 30 points a game, and he said he had taken back the play calling.
Okay. Going off of that though, Mike, you mentioned the players.
Yeah.
How much of Brandon Bean do we have to add into this? Where do you think that level of should be at?
I think Brandon Bean is an outstanding general manager.
Yeah.
I think he has given the Bills something they did not have since back in the Super Bowl days, which is legitimacy in the front office, respected guy. Is he perfect? No. Has he whiffed on some things? Yes. Did they calculate incorrectly this year about the offensive line? I think they did. I think they thought, bring him back, add a rookie, let's see where it goes. I would have liked to have seen more there, more depth, you know, maybe upgrades at some of these spots. I think that's really where they've kind of let the team down. He's tried. Could they have done something at the deadline? Yeah. Would it have been great to get another body in there? Yes. But these are the guys they have, and I still don't think it's been good enough. So you could make that argument on Bean, who you're not going to sit here and have me criticize him that he doesn't know what he's doing. He's a great general manager. But this has not been the same offseason that he had the year before. It gets tougher. Now we get down to a few big key moves. And I think in total, he's done an outstanding job. I think he deserves some criticism for the way the O-line has played.
Yeah, I feel like the process is had a full-on relationship. So they start dating in 2017. Jenna will probably add in great analysis here. But Mike, as you're talking about it, where you're like, you're complimenting him, but I'm like waiting for the big butt. Like to be like, he's great. He's a great, obviously Brandon
I have
Bean's
a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, like
we
he's
had so
awesome.
Many good times together.
on top of that, he's a Braves fan, so I know he's like a really smart GM.
Right.
So they start dating in 2017, right? They have their first
guys.
Fight. No, they have their first fight in 2018. Like it was like, oh boy, but you're like, we'll get through this. Like we'll get through this, guys. And then they kind of get engaged in 2019, and you're like, this is pretty cool. Like we're married. You know, we're gonna get married. And 2020, they exceed expectations. It's
the honeymoon.
Awesome. Yeah. It's the honeymoon. We yeah. are now, honey, you're leaving your dishes in the sink and you're not soaking them. Like
so this it's is not enough. Kind- it's not breakup. It's just annoying stuff.
It's just annoying yeah. stuff. The Bills are still above 500. I still think they have a good chance to make the playoffs. They still get to face the Jets and the Falcons down the stretch. But like we are over the honeymoon phase. We're starting to be
it's
like
on now.
It's like, yeah. what are, it's, you're asking like, what's for dinner? And you're like, you pick. And it's like, yeah. well, why don't you pick? And it's like, well, last way, time you picked, this was, it was awful.
And by the way, you never liked his mother. So, but yeah, so Jenna, to your point, now we've gone from Tesla snow tires to Brandon Bean's relationships, yeah. Is that, look, there's some fault there. And you know, look, and I got to say this, like, Bobby Johnson, heck of a guy. Everybody likes him. The offensive line is underachieved. This is what happens in the NFL. Is it all on a coach? Absolutely not. It's on players. It's on coaches. But sometimes maybe it's a different voice, different idea.
Yeah.
But if there's going to be criticism, it usually goes downhill a little bit. That's, you know, there's a phrase for that. But I think everything is on the table for this team. But to transition to the last part we're going to talk about, everything is still in front of this team. They're not done. It's not yeah. over. And if they snap out of it, they still have a chance to do really good things this year.
Yeah. They're currently right now in the seventh final wild card spot, entering week 14. Obviously, they have Tampa coming up. And like you mentioned, Dan, there's the Falcons ahead. There's the Jets. There's other games too. But
Patriots again, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. But it is still ahead of this team, and it's interesting because I feel like, Dan, this team has really struggled when they've been in that hunted position. Now I feel like with the way things went on Monday night, they're kind of in that underdog role yeah. once again.
Yeah, there's plenty of room to jump back on the bandwagon of the Bills. Like, this would be the time. And I think last year, weren't the Bucs 7-5?
I just got off. Kyle Berger is a guy that's right here on the Buffalo Plus channel. And we were talking about what that's it was last like year. It. He goes, they were 7-5 and they were struggling and they came off the bye. And people are like, yeah, maybe it's going to take a little while for Tom Brady and it's not going the way it was. And then they got going.
Yeah.
Now I know it's just Tom Brady. I get it. But it's 42-year-old Tom Brady too, with a new team. Yeah. So yeah. Hey, look, you want to get everybody back? Go knock off the Bucks Sunday. Go beat them. Yeah.
The problem is that the Bills defense, especially too, you knew Mac Jones in that weather wasn't going to test Trey White or the lack that of missing Trey White. Now Tom Brady, who is having another MVP caliber season, can kind of pick his poison because Leonard Fournette is another power back. That offensive line has some road graders in there. Like, this is going to be the test for the Bills defense. But on the other side, the Bills offense should feast on this banged up secondary of the Bucs.
They're like, talking about Richard Sherman playing safety. He can't play this corner anymore.
This is 50. I think the over under is 53.5, and that's the highest of the week by far. And so like, this is going to be the time where, again, I couldn't be more team dome in Orchard Park. But again, this is the conditions that the Bills as a whole play very well in. And it's just going to be come down to, you know, can they execute? Because cliche, at the end of the day, cliche, that's what it all comes down to, is execution.
Hey, Jenna, we're not going to need snow tires in Tampa.
Woo!
Shut up. Shut up.
It's supposed to be 85 on Saturday and a brisk 75.
That's perfect. That's what you want. Sunday. 85 when we get down there. Sunday, you're on the sidelines. By the way, it's you and Mike Evans again on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Yeah, no Trey playing. That's very disappointing in many ways. But yeah. So just step back a little bit there when you see Big Mike.
If I get run over again,
No, would it go extra viral, or would it just be one of those things like, here it goes?
Here she goes.
What do
again.
I tweet? What do I tweet? Guys,
Mike Evans is after me.
What do you say?
Mike Evans is after me. Yeah, he's chasing you down on the sidelines.
Seriously, no.
Yeah. The picture of you, like.
That was 4 years ago. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? It feels like it was 52 years ago. If
I'm yeah.
Kidding. All right. That was a Jameis Winston-led Tampa Bay.
Yes.
This may be our best pod. This may be the best one. Oh, I know wow. we say that often. I think this is the best
you
one.
You say that after every show.
I think so. I think this is yeah. the best one.
Well, we're a little fired up today. Got yeah, me going. Right. I went after the Boston media, snow tires,
marriages.
Belichick, marriages. Yeah. Mike Evans.
And I'm just glad as a whole, as a Bills community, as a whole, as a Buffalo Plus family, that we can just be done with running the football. I have fought so hard. I fought so hard for this, and I was the yeah. OG. I want to be known as the OG of pass the ball on 100% of downs. And I'm just glad that I'm not alone anymore.
How
that,
about
like you? We can all be big hug.
How about Daboll this week, Jenna? 46 passes, 3 runs.
Yeah, I honestly would not be shocked. I saw a really good tweet. Let me see if I can find it. It was let Josh flambe, let Josh broil, let Josh roast, let Josh bake, like let Josh do all the cooking. I can't remember who tweeted it, but it was really funny.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Let Josh cook. Yeah.
We'll see what you get. We'll have plenty more coverage coming up on the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel. Mike, tell them about, you briefly mentioned it, but you did speak with a reporter in Tampa.
Yeah, it was really good. He gave us a lot of insight, and for Bills fans, I mean, he's describing a lot of what it's like down there for the Bucks, which is annoying just because it's Brady and Gronk. But Gronk said some great things about Buffalo. Again, they're not as annoying because they're not in Foxborough anymore. But the other thing he did talk about was the Bucks defense. Strong up front, but as Dan hinted at there, really having issues in the secondary. And if you can protect Josh, you can hammer this Bucks secondary. Mm-hmm. That's a big if. But if you can get the ball out, they do not have the guys right now that can cover. They got to get to the quarterback. So Brady is not getting hit at all. When he did get hit in the Washington game, he told me, he said he just was not the same guy the rest of the game. And they got beat. He threw a couple picks. And he doesn't like to get hit when he was 23, let alone when he's 43. So that would be a key. But the key thing was you can score on the Bucks. So we'll see. Yeah.
We shall see. It'll be a fun game. We know the weather will be really nice. Yeah. Sorry, Dan.
this was 1-1 in the Bills draft. Everybody always asks us, how do you know who's going to which games? We do a draft. That's what happens. Jenna and I do a draft. Jenna got first pick, seniority. Mm-hmm. And 1-1 off the board was Tampa in December. So this is your game.
What was your second? What was your first choice?
Kansas City.
Okay.
It rained there. Rained in Jacksonville.
Mike, it was so bad they thought about postponing the game until tomorrow. They thought about pushing the game back. That's how bad. They were worried about people's safety. It was so bad at my first game that I picked.
You know how to pick them. All right. I don't know. All right. Thank you so much for watching. We'll have more content coming up. Please be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. You know how much that means to us and always helps out our channel. So we always appreciate that. For Mike and Dan, I'm Jenna. We'll catch you next time on the Buffalo Plus YouTube channel.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.